Okay, last time we started the second sutta halfway, short of three stanzas. We stop it for today's review. Before going to the particular sutta, Guhatta Sutta, if anyone is having any other questions or statement or kind of thing, we can get little time, and then otherwise we are going to go to 778 onward,
Gatha. Sir Bhante, we have received one report today. With your permission, I can present that.
Yes, please.
Dear Bhante, I am 17 years old and here's my meditation experience. I started by looking at my breath as always, but then my mind gradually began to be flooded by thoughts. So then I began to watch my thoughts, which slowed down the more I looked at it. And at times my breath will wave and between my thoughts, but it did not disturb me. After watching the flow of my thoughts for a while, I went to sleep. Please advise me. Teruvan Sarnai, Onaya Karunar. That's the end of the report, Panthi.
So that this is one of the results that you understand how the mind is working. Because you try to discipline, then you see the indisciplined mind. When you try to draw a line and then cut along the line, then you can see you are going off the cut. But if you don't have a line, you don't know even that you are off the cut. So therefore, understanding that mind is wandering, mind is full of thought, is an endowment, is a result. So next time, don't try to go to get rid of it. Just try to be with it. No harm. Whenever there are no such distraction, bewilderment, then you go to the primary object. Therefore, you must understand the purpose of appointing a primary object. That's very clearly indicated by Mahasi Syado. Whenever there are no turbulence, whenever the flow is unturbulent, then you take the primary object as the aim. Whenever there are other things, you just see things as they are because they are not what you intended to do. It is happening. And you know, whenever it is happening, if your mind is mindful, your main task is to be with the primary object, provided that there are no turbulence, there are no distraction, there are no bewilderment. So understanding bewilderment is the first and foremost primary thing, but I doubt whether Samatha yogis will appreciate it. But Vipassana definitely appreciating. That is what the difference between the concentration mindfulness and the wisdom mindfulness. So I invite you to be, just be mindful and be prepared for the thoughts. Okay?
Thank you, Bhante. Okay,
I invite Venerable Buddharakhita to proceed with the place where we stopped last time.
So again, I'm continuing with the Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation of the Octad on the Cave, the Guhataka Sutta.
Guhataka.
And so in the first verse of this sutta, it's on gratification, and the next four verses, the Buddha speaks of the danger. And so now we will continue, and he is going to speak about how to, having removed desires from both ends. So, see them trembling over things taken as mine, like fish in a depleted stream with little water. Having seen this too, one should take nothing as mine, not forming attachment to states of existence. So, the Buddha really gets down to the crux of the problem, which is this conceitedness, mine, this topic of mine. So mine here, we're meaning, when we mean mine, we mean this conceit, I am better than, I am the same as, or I am equal to. So this is getting down to the crux, no other religion, I think, puts this emphasis, special emphasis and clarity on the state of mind, this tendency of the mind to identify with something, and then once an identification is met, then we make a judgment. I am superior, I am equal to, I am inferior to. And as a result of this, there is going to be trembling. And he describes this as in a very cinematographic way, as like a fish out of water, a fish in a depleted stream. And such a fish is under the threat of being picked out by birds. So one feels very vulnerable and naked when one is exposed. We have this feeling of mine. We feel deep senses of shame. So mine is a product of this craving, and it's arising because of views. So because of cravings and views, this sense of mine starts to arise. And there's a possessive quality to mine. I own it, I possess it, it's mine. So we delight in mine, but we also suffer tremendously because of mine. You know, if we feel threatened, we suffer. If we have a victory, we are happy. If we have a loss, we feel sad. So what is the trembling? It is around mine, the state of mine. So again, really, in Buddhism is the only place I've really come across this in tremendous importance or respect towards this quality of the mind to form a conceit, to form a perception of mine. And it's notable in these days, actually, that mine, this identification, has become like a religion or a cult. You know, the cult of mine. And we have a lot of reinforcements, like social media, likes and dislikes on social media, to reinforce this characteristic of mind, this quality of the mind to identify with things. But this is the nature, this is how we arise with a trembling. Having removed desire for both ends, having fully understood contact without greed, not doing anything for which one might blame oneself, the wise person is not tainted by things seen or heard. So here the Buddha prescribes us to follow the path, to remove desire for both ends. So here he's referring to both ends, meaning the contact and the subject. So when we see something, we desire it, but there's also desire arising in our mind. So we have to train our mind to not take possession of what we see on the one hand, and on the other hand, to quell that sense of desire in our heart. So we try to remove this desire by both ends. So contact is one end, the origin of contact is the other end. The past is one end, the future is the second end. Pleasant feeling is one end, and painful feeling is the second end. So if you remember, in the last few months, we've been looking at this Dvyatana Nupassana Sutta, and we could look at things in this dyadic way. So this is a very useful methodology in Buddhism of seeing both sides. And as we move into the next sutta later on, this whole aspect of seeing how hostility arises because we don't see both sides. We only see our own argument. We don't see the other person's argument or side of the story. So again, as you remember, we've just mentioned how the role in possessiveness is around views and also around not just views, but also because of craving itself. So mine is arising on account of craving. Mine is arising on account of views. And this is also both ends. So this form of analysis is really, again, very powerful. It's the power of reflection and yoni soma manasikara, tracing things back to the cause, or yathabhuta dasana, to again develop a wise attention to what's going on in the world. This ability to see things from both ends. So having removed desire by both ends, having fully understood contact. So again, contact is a myriad of contacts. We have the six sense bases, so eye contact, ear contact, nose contact, taste, touch, and mind aura, and so on. So we have many types of contact. We need to understand these fully. So this requires mindfulness. So whenever a contact arises, we are present, we are a witness to that contact. We recognize the object and we recognize the process of contacting with that object. And we are, because of that awareness and because of wisdom, we remove greed. So without greed, not doing anything for which one might blame oneself. So here is in the importance of dana and of sila. If we have generosity and if we have a good morality, we can reflect upon our life and not have blame for oneself. Whereas if we have an immoral life and if we are stingy and so forth, then we have reason for self-blame. So the wise person is not tainted by things seen or heard. So whatever the person sees or hears, they are not tainted by it. They don't take possession of it, as I mentioned earlier on. Then the final verse is, having fully understood perception, one can cross the flood, the muni, untainted by possessions, with the dart extracted, living heedfully, does not desire this world or another. So again, this idea of crossing a flood, at the time the Buddha was living in the Ganges plain, so always there was the river Ganges, and the flooding of this river and its tributaries is a very key aspect of farming, of growing rice. So this idea of flooding, that we are flooded by our desires, flooded by craving, and so on. To be free from this flood, to cross the flood, is a metaphor for freedom from our suffering, from these rounds of rebirth. Having fully understood perception. So perception is how we engage with the world. We perceive the world. When we see something, when we feel something, touch it, smell it, taste it, we form a perception in our mind. And this process of perception itself is faulty. So we need to fully understand perception to understand the faulty nature of that perception. So we see something and we like it, or we see something and we dislike it. So this like and dislike is an add-on of perception. The muni, this is a description of an arahant or of a like a sage, a silent person. So this is very frequently found in these older texts. A muni is a description of somebody on a spiritual path, untainted by possessions. Again, untainted meaning not stained by the possessions. Here they use this idea of taints, hindrances, defilements. These are things that defile, or they like dirty you. So to be untainted means to be cleansed or free from possession. And again, I'll remind you that possession here, we're talking about possession of views as well as possessed by desire. So with the dart extracted, living heedfully, does not desire this world or another. So again, the dart here is the dart of the desire for rebirth. or the dart is the suffering side. There's two sides to any affliction, which is there's the bodily pain and then there's the mental suffering. So here we can, by following the path, we can remove the mental suffering where the dart is extracted. Living heedfully. So one is always heedful before enlightenment, during enlightenment and after enlightenment. So heedfulness becomes a way of existence and does not desire this world or another. So here they do not, like for many saints or in other religions, they desire the heavens, the heavenly realms. But the arahants do not desire a heavenly realm. They desire, or their practice is to not be reborn again. So they do not desire this world or another. So that is a brief run through these last three verses. Maybe Venerable Mahadeva would like to add.
So that since I listened to the first version, today's Pashami Lokem Paripandamanang Pajang Imang Tanhagatang Bhavesu Hina Nara Mach Mukhe Lapanti Avita Tanna So Bhava Bhavesu. The example given is little water body and full of fish, and they are dancing and jumping, and all the other animals and come and pick them, because they are appear like delighted, but they are little amount of water. So therefore, more than in a big water body, less the amount of water, easy prey they become, and they are fighting each other. And ultimately, everything is finished. So in the world, sensor, what the senses can understand is less, just like the water, little water body. What the senses cannot understand beyond the perception is unlimited. And the fish can't live in air. They have fear for lack of water. Exactly, our mind is always based upon the sensory perception. They don't know. The sensory perception is less than 2% maybe in the earth, in the universe. Only manifested thing you can see, manifested thing you can hear, smell, taste and touch. But before manifestation, after manifestation, a huge space. So that part, just like the fish cannot live on the air, we have fear. That is called arupa. So our whole politics, economics, science, everything is rupaloka. That is perceivable, that is sensory. And they are fighting each other. That get the patent recording and the one-upmanship and win-win situation at any cost for the what is perceivable. But they don't know, after you comprehend the perceivable, mind go beyond unperceivable. It is not scientific, it is mystic, it is not perceivable, that is not verifiable. But the Buddha says it is verifiable. Mindfulness is, that is the point where mindfulness becomes steadfast. So end of the breath is not the death. It is not the end of the out-breath, it is not the beginning of the in-breath. There is a gap. So if you know the gap, ultimately you find it is not like a fish fighting in the breath. This is after the breath and before the breath. And that part you never see unless otherwise you comprehend the breath from the beginning to the end. Before beginning, endless, boundless. After the end, boundless. So fish don't like it. So therefore, sometimes they are worrying about, I can't catch the breath and I don't feel anapana and kind of thing. Anapana is not the thing Buddha wanted to show you. He wanted to show before anapana what is happening. After the before in-breath what is happening. After the in-breath. So scientific world telling it is mystical. It is not perceivable. It is not measurable. It is not verifiable. That is why the Buddha took the mindfulness as the yardstick. Before the breath, you can be mindful, in-breath. Before the out-breath, you can be mindful. Before the left leg, right leg, you can be mindful. And that mindfulness is the break-even point from the samatha to vipassana. The vipassana, this is with the object is have or have not, no problem. Mindfulness still perceive just like a plane. As far as runway is running on the wheels. And then when it's lifted, airborne, still the aerodynamics is there. Not only the ground dynamics. And before the Overtright and Wilburtright, they never thought. So much of a weight you can weigh, taken into the air and still you can land, you can take off, you can glide, you can go up, go down. So that is the part the Buddha says, as far as we are in a Rupa Loka, we are beasts, we are reptilian. We are in such a trap. That is a fish tank. So much of fish, less lack of water. So the science is making it more virulent, more agitated. But the Buddha, also a scientist, exactly the same tools he used, but he says, just go beyond the materiality. Not you are enlightened. Buddha says it is yathābhūta jñāna. It is verifiable. So the Panisacharya says, the verifiable faith. You start with the faith which is manifested. See, hear, smell, taste, tongue. Nose, the smell, touch and kindness. You master it, not to the Isaac Newton level. When you master, definitely you will cascade and go to the unavailability or unperceivable or beyond senses. So that part, not only Buddhism, all the other religions also talk about. And then Buddha says, now you see another perspective, immaterialistic kind of pleasure. And for that pleasure, no competition, no fish, no fish smell. It's open. So that is why people do not happy the forest. That's why people do not happy under the trees. That's why people do not happy Sunyagara. He wanted to bring Buddhism to the Colombo 7 or to the New York or to the auditorium with soundproof and mosquito proof and all the kind of thing. Bloody shit. It is abandoned in the forest. I'm not telling it is abandoned. Nibbana, I'm telling the freedom. No corona. Even the corona is there, it is not so vulnerable. But thing is, we have a fear. We must have insurance, we have health insurance, economic insurance, political insurance. They have given enough to the humankind. Wherever congested, it is a disease, it's a disaster. So still the Buddha is living under the tree, no problem. So if you wish to be a fish, fishy smell, you are ganyakere, kulyakere, congested and bounded to your cult. Your team, your pet ideas, your favorites. But when you are living in the forest or you are living in the immaterial part, the end of the in-breath, beginning of the in-breath, so you find you and me are the same in the beyond the materialistic part. Within the materialistic part, we are fighting sectarianism. Soon you go there, if I got correctly, when Sigmund Freud is talking about, he used to talk about the dreams and other kind of thing. Carl Jung, he tried to explain universal unconscious. You are not conscious. It is called unconscious because still you can be conscious. You are not in this seeing, hearing, in this one-upmanship arena. You can go beyond. Some people try to go it with drugs. Marijuana and all the kinds of go to and they entertain it. But the Buddha says they are addicted. But Buddha gave mindfulness, go beyond materialism and then the immaterial sphere, but still not Nibbana. It's a comparison, amisha niramisha, materialistic and material pressure. But science, as a rule, they put into the church, they took perceivable part. That means they always take a knowingly minority and make a bubble out of that to make the human desire fulfilled with minority. That try to explain in quantum physics, whatever the collapsed matter is such a trivial. The uncollapsed energy is a they call kshetra, or in Pali call, in English you call the energy fields, not collapsed, not belong to someone, not belong to, not possessing any limits. It's a field. So that field, very limited to Isaac Newton, but this Einstein went a little further, he went almost mad, and now we are along it. I am not telling they are along the line of mindfulness or along the line of enlightenment, but I am telling we are fighting for the minority. And just before this particular stanza, last time we finish it, appang hitan jeevitan audiran. So Buddha says, whatever you fight, take it as a minority. It is underestimate. Don't take it seriously. Main thing is not to worry. Appang hitan jeevitan audira. What you are fighting is trivial. What is it? The humanity never gets disturbed by doing bad things. Humanity is humanity. Bad things sometimes you do, sometimes not. But some people say everything we must be measure and judge. But who is the judge? You also another human. So therefore, they are trivial things. But leave it aside. Go to a solitude place or go to a end of the in-breath and out-breath. You are completely newly born. You are completely, I call it, born again Buddhist. No religion. So therefore, whenever you go to the fight, one up and see that you are in a cult. You are in a congestion. You are in a aggregation. The Buddha says, first and foremost is, you must go to it knowingly, but you must know if you have the past merits, if you have the endowment, you know the solitude. But if you consider the solitude as a aloneness, good. If you consider the loneliness, you're mentally sick. So therefore, this sutta is not for such mentally sick people, that already those who know aloneness can learn it. We go to the minority. We are not going to the popularity. He verily mentioned very correctly about the mass media or the social media, utterly misleading the humankind. We are also, I myself also attracted to it. But I see the disadvantage of it. And with that, I am thankful for them. Because that is what the media, that is what the technology is giving them, all the facilities to drag the people to this fighting tank, fish of tank, limited amount of water. But the Buddha says, universe is such a huge one, why should you go to this the one-upmanship? Why should you go to this congestion? It is called non-congestional area, Buddha says, Vijanavata. Vijanavata means, my forest is not we are breathing someone's exhalation. We breathe fresh air. Imagine you are in a housing scheme, someone is out breathing, other person is in breathing. So then corona. But here, Vijanavata, the breeze is completely refreshing. Water fountains are completely free. I mean, free of germs. But over there, it is full of chlorine. And in Sydney, they say they have recycled water for 9 times. You are using recycled water. So we feel shit. Can't help. Can't help. A bottle of water is more than a bottle of milk. In Sri Lanka. So, but here, you see the water is free, air is free, fresh. But people do not like it. Even under the corona situation. So I suggested, why don't we have a rehabilitation camp in the down meditation hall? People to come and rehabilitate here and meditate here. But our people frightened in telling that it will bring corona. Even without the corona can come. So therefore, we are inviting to see the bigger picture. Don't limit it into this arena of the senses. I mean, based upon that, but human mind is not limited. As far as it is limited to the senses, it is reptilian. It is monkey mind. It is animal mind. But if you can go beyond, don't think in the air, the plane cannot be stable. It can be stable. It can have the aerodynamics, of course, with the speed. So that is being introduced not only is Buddhism. This is a halfway level. And then only you go even before the immaterial path. So this is paving the path. That is what I would like to add after listening to the commentarial explanation of Venerable. Any American comment? So you're always gaining, you're never giving. Congested.
Grab it. Air is very... you can't get a hold of air very easily. You can't
congested.
Grab it. But it's the most important thing for our survival. We cannot live without air for more than 5 minutes, maybe. I don't know if that... Does that make any...
I
does
heard,
that add anything?
I heard, I don't know whether I got it, in Japan, in China, the high-rise buildings, third floor, fourth floor, there's a special poisonous air layer in the morning. The lower level different, and you can see sometimes, and above different. So therefore, they import air from Stonehenge of UK, 1 kilogram of air is so much. Because their oxygen is completely polluted. Just like corona, and you have less oxygen absorption. So they import. So much so, they pollute it, because otherwise they can't keep the economy. Keep on building. So they are deserted towns. And when the people go there, certain layers, they are. And in the Christchurch in New Zealand, after the burning the heaters, there's a cloud formed, because it's a valley. And there are plane trips, and the air purity is disturbed. So everything is stopped. They have to go for electric heaters now, because of that air layer. Once that is polluted, no way. But Sri Lanka, we get 4,000 miles of free ocean from the southern tip. And then fresh air we get it. So all the other countries you see, they are interconnected that in the map, they don't get it. They breathe their own this thing. And that is, people do not understand. They understand the value of the water. They understand the value of the solid food. They don't understand the value of the air, because it's free of charge. But for the China, you have to import air from Stonehenge. So this is what they are happy with, the congested cult, and live in urbanization rather than be in the forest. And kind of, I know living forest is a very luxurious thing, everyone can't afford it, that is different issue, but I am telling is your outlook, look at it. But the people think living in the forest is aboriginal, they are uncivilized. They are not happy. They are not improved. They are not civilized to live in the society. The civilized people is called citizen. Puravasya. And the present day education is to make a citizen. Finished. Education is successful. Man is finished. They made the citizen. So they don't know how to live in the forest. They don't know the trees. They don't know the herbal values. Because everyone is carried, taken to the different countries and different regimes and different capital cities and kind of thing. High-rise building. What is happening? The corona is a very good, very mild, very good answer. And I hope the nature will teach day by day, with my much stronger messages. So therefore, don't go to this congested area. Don't go to the Janavada, that means out-breath air. Go to the fresh air. And for that, you need not any enlightenment. They said the Buddha renounced the palace and went to the forest. His father, his wife, and his son cannot understand him. Because what the hell that you are renouncing the palace and going to the forest and begging, and living by the river and taking a bath and have a sunlight and meditate, even without enlightenment, that is good. So that is what the Buddha is now, after the enlightenment, giving in a gist. He says, Pasami lokam paripandamanam. See the world, they are jumping and fighting like a fish in a small water area. And they are fighting, they become victimized. Mm.
Swaminansa, also air now is a commodity. We, like you say, now they can import air. We need air to survive.
No,
like a fish needs
oxygen
water.
For corona. Mm. We are also planning to have an oxygen plant. While they are living, they don't do my mindful meditation, breathing, in breath and out breath. When the corona happened, they understand the oxygen value and they wanted to have oxygen mask, oxygen cylinder, oxygen regulator. Mm. Because they neglect normal breathing. It's abundant. Mm. 20% oxygen. Mm. But otherwise you have to import oxygen. In India went out of stock. Mm. No oxygen. People are living alone, sitting under the trees, and even in Sri Lanka now. Hmm. Till that they don't know breathing is important. They have to have corona. Corona in the pneumonia level. And the pneumonia level. So therefore we have to understand matter is very little. Immaterial part is before the matter and after the matter. So you have to go through matter as much as possible and see the before the matter happened, before collapse into matter, and after it is dissolving into where is? The ocean. That's a place where no fighting. Buddha says, Nibbana, there is no population burst. It's always free. Anyone can go there. But if you want to go to Japan, you can hire a small room, just like a coffin. You have to pay whole salary. So that is Japan.
To get oxygen?
No, to go to have a residence place.
Oh, residence.
Place close by a station. Railway station.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like a coffin. You pull it and sleep and push it and go and and then we call Japan is good. Shit. I mean, this forest. I am not talking about the meditation. I am talking not about the spirituality. I am not talking about the material world, immaterial place. Mm. How people, where they are searching? They are searching just like Nasruddin. Nasruddin is searching the key under the life post. See, everyone is asking, everyone coming to help, I'll tell you, one person asks, where did you lost it? I lost it in my room. So then why you are searching here? At the room, no light. So he's searching here side by and in the light. So that is exactly the science. That is exactly the present education. But we are happy. Attaka Vaga is still available.
Actually, this story about the fish reminds me in Burma in the hot season, all the water dries up in all the ponds, and then the fish are stuck in the last area. So as kind of part of the celebration for the water festival, people go out with large vessels, and particularly younger people, and they'll start scooping up the fish into these pots and into these large vessels, and they'll bring them to the river and release them into the river. But it's kind of like a part of the celebration of the water festival. So it's quite an ancient idea that that the fish get trapped in these small pockets of water in the hot season, and then like I said, in Burma, they make a celebration out of it, of catching those fish and then releasing them again, as if it's like a merit. But it's just like a lot of fun and games, and all the young kids will climb into these kind of pond areas and get covered in mud, and they have a lot of fun. So I remember during the heat of the hot season that you would hear also this kind of shout of fun and games of the villagers coming together and scooping up these fish and releasing them.
Pandita-sahib also told in his life story, he has a young salmonera. He also jumped into the pond and catch the fish. It's detrimental. It's poisoning. And it's biting. So, but he, without knowing, catch them and go and release them. And then only the senior monk told they are very detrimental. They are they can bite you, and the stones and spikes are. But he says there were some damages, but no poisonous. Because he did it with complete compassion. if they are stuck with the mud and little water, catch them and take it to the big water bodies. And it's a big ceremony on Vesak Poya Day. They celebrate, they liberate water into the Bodhi tree and bring pots and release into the ponds. The pond is full of fish. There's a special kind of fish. That fish is very hardy living and they are biting. Catfish or something like that. So Panditaja says, I also did without knowing, no damage. Okay, that almost finished, but we can just start the Duttattaka Sutta, the next in the third in the Attakavaka.
Yeah, I'll just mention that these last three verses that we've been dwelling on today, it's surprising in the commentaries, it's almost half the commentary is given to those three verses. So again, if you get the chance to look at these poems and you can reflect on them, they're very beautiful. Bhikkhu Bodhi has done a lovely translation, and each word, each phrase is pregnant with meaning. And if you find Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation, for instance, he has translated the commentaries as well. So there's a lot of very interesting stories related to each parts of these verses. So we'll just start with the next sutta, which is the octave on the hostile, the Duttattaka Sutta. Duttattaka Sutta. Some speak with hostile minds, while some speak with minds bent on truth. The Muni does not become involved in an arisen dispute. Therefore, the Muni has no barrenness anywhere. No barrenness anywhere. How could one transcend one's own view if, drawn by desire, one is entrenched in a preference? Taking one's own view to be perfect, one would speak as one understands. So actually this short sutta again is actually one of the main reasons that I wanted to take this chapter of the octaves as a topic for the Wasa, because it seems that these last few years there has been a lot of these what they call culture wars and people speaking with hostile minds. So they are not bent on truth. So they're speaking just with hostility, and they are putting in an argument instead of an analysis or a search. They don't search for truth. They just search for argument. And so this, when I was looking at the suttas, and this one really stood out as addressing some of these issues. So I hope that you were listening to this sutta will find something meaningful in it. So we need to distinguish between truth and argument. And we shouldn't be fooled by argument as truth. And we also should be aware, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, we should distinguish between entertainment and news. So we think that news is truth or should be truthful. But in the present times, it seems like a lot of the news companies are just entertaining instead of telling the truth. So this requires a certain circumspection. You know, when we hear things, when we assess what is being said, we need to understand that that there's a potential for a dispute to arise, and that the wise people do not become involved in these disputes. So as they say, like, it's hard to distinguish between a fool and a wise person in an argument. So try to avoid getting into these arguments, and you know, having a boundary. So it's not about being right or wrong. It's about avoiding getting into these disputes. So if we avoid getting into disputes, then, as it says here, therefore the Muni has no barrenness anywhere. So this, as we mentioned in the earlier sutta, that conceitedness is very much bent around desire and views. And views are very particularly, weaponized in in speech and in hostile arguments. So this sutta again is a very timeless sutta, where, you know, 2,500 years ago, almost 2,600 years ago, the Buddha was speaking about matters that are still pertinent and relevant to this very present time. So it really speaks. We talk a lot about development and civilization and how the world has changed so much in the last 20 years or 200 years. But here you can see in 2,500 years how little the human condition has changed, or the mental condition at least, or the nature of people and how we relate to each other. So these teachings are still timeless. Anyway, maybe Mahatero has something to say.
The information technology is a very, very well coined term. Technology is nothing but information technology. So ultimately, they always 100% based on hate. All the information, but they call it an entertainment. They call the via news media, we entertain people because people are more happy to listen tragedies. So therefore, if you see number of novels in the world, many are tragedies. If you see films, many are tragedies. Because people are messagist or sadistic. So therefore, news media always bring something wrong. So we have a special attraction for that kind of thing. So that is what? The hate-based system. But we appreciate that news come far away from us and unbelievably from the other end of the world, but they don't know we are blood boiling. Utterly blood boiling. So therefore, Arthur Schopenhauer told, don't read. And when Jnanarama says, don't read newspapers. Go to the forest and trees and the animals, they are talking something. It's not been the truth. It is not entertainment. But living in this entertaining society, bending the truth society, and just living itself is an acrobat. It's a kind of a balance. It's an acrobat. Because they are giving so much of diseases physically. They are giving pollution mentally and physically. Whole thing is a network. Simply you can reduce information technology. Technology is an information. Information is a technology. They are killing. But they can't reach the present moment. Information technology cannot reach the present moment. It reaches the past, future, other people, other places. So they are polluted. So we are very happy. Even we are given with the present moment, our mind is not happy. It's always jumping to the past and future because it's searching. It is is thirsty. So the Buddha says present moment is asokang virajang khemang. Asokang means no worries. Virajang means no dust. Khemang means it's an oasis in the desert. But it is an endowment. It's a birthright of the human being. Only the Buddha appointed it, and we are happy than the direct touch. We are happy with the information. We are happy with the inferential. We are happy with the deductive knowledges. We are very prolific, very lucrative. And so we are listening with open mouth newsreel. And now earlier in Sri Lanka, the TV we have to have license. Radio we have to have license. But now it's free. Because advertisement is paying everything. Many magazines are there. They are full of filth, give free of charge. Otherwise, you have to pay so much. So this is the way it is running. So just imagine the younger generation. Just imagine the victimized people for that. And present-day parents, teachers are totally responsible. But I am telling, as far as the mindfulness is there, situation is never too late. We can just tell them, show in the mirror, yes, yes, you are polluted, you are drug addicted, cancer, corona, but still you can be mindful. And then you are coming back to the zero position, pure position. That is what I think.
And maybe it would be helpful to just connect what Mahathera was saying now to the actual background story to this sutta, which is probably even more dramatic than his story about the present state of Sri Lankan media. But the original, the background story to this was that there was a very beautiful wanderer called Sudari. And the other wanderers of other sects were getting very jealous of how prosperous the Buddhist monks were and the support that the Buddha had cultivated. So they asked her to, she was apparently very beautiful, this wanderer, you can say like a nun. And they asked her to bathe and...
Sundari.
Having bathed and put on beautiful clothes and adorned herself when the residents of Sawati were leaving Jeta's grove, after listening to the Buddha, she would head to the grove. And when people asked her where she was going, she said, I'm going to pleasure the ascetic Gautama and his disciples. And she would then linger around the gatehouse at the entrance to Jeta's grove and enter the city when the gatehouse was closed. And in the morning, she would go again back to the Jeta's grove and walk around as if seeking flowers near the fragrant cottage where the Buddha was living. So when people came to serve the Buddha, they would ask her, why have you come? And she would say something at random. After half a month had passed in this way, the sectarians killed her, buried her in a pit, and in the morning they raised an uproar, saying, we have not seen Sundari. They reported this matter to the king and got his permission to have Jeta to enter Jeta's grove. Wandering around, they exhumed her body, put her on a stretcher and brought her to the city and made a complaint. So all that day and all that night, as night was coming, the Blessed One surveyed the world with his Buddha eye and knew that today the sectarians will defame us. I should not let the multitude believe them, set their minds against us, and thereby head towards a rebirth in the realm of misery. So he shut the door of his cottage and remained inside and did not enter the city for alms. When the bhikkhus saw that the door was shut, they entered the city as on previous days. When the people saw the bhikkhus, they insulted them in various ways. The Venerable Ananda reported that even to that event to the Blessed One and said, Bhante, we have been defamed by the sectarians. We cannot live here. Jambudipa is large, so let's go elsewhere. But if we are also defamed there, Ananda, where will you go? To still another city, Venerable Sir. When the Blessed One said, wait, Ananda, the commotion will persist only 7 days. After 7 days have passed, those who have defamed us will regain their senses. And in order to teach the Dhamma to the elder Venerable Ananda, he spoke the verse that we are now reading and discussing today. So we can see again, as I mentioned, that the human nature is kind of constant, you know, that even the description here about these ads, sexy ads or whatever, paying for our viewership on papers and the media, this is not a new enterprise, that even in the ancient times, the sectarians were using this to try to create a division with the Buddha and the disciples and the supporting community out of jealousy. As we mentioned in the previous sutta about possessions and possessiveness, so that possessions are arising because of possessiveness or because of greed and also because of views. So here the sectarians didn't agree with the Buddha. They had their own teachings, they had their own views, but they also had this possessiveness as well arising. So this sutta, this is the background to this sutta. It's very dramatic in its own way. And, you know, it's not like the modern times have become bad or worse than the past times. In many ways, the past times were worse than the modern times. So we should, we shouldn't like take the view that, oh, in the good old days, it was good. And now we're in the bad times. I think, you know, if you think about the news about Afghanistan, with the Taliban and stuff like that, it's like a country going into going back to medieval times again. So, you know, it's not like that progression is a sure thing, or that civilization is a sure thing. So when these teachings arise, when wisdom arises, we should take great care of it, because the natural tendency is for it to revert back to a kind of a state of wildness or wilderness. So even if you go to these same places in which we now talk about here in the suttas in India, they're also quite overgrown or wild or abandoned at times, some of the ancient sites. And the civilization of Buddhism has been lost from some of those areas, like particularly Bihar, where the Buddha spent a lot of time and is now a very poor place. So these teachings are rather precious and timeless, so we should take great care of them.
Thank you for the timely, proper time you reminded it. I'm not, even though I am quoting the names, I am not insulting. One day the Krishnamurti came to Sri Lanka and have a discussion with the Prime Minister, and they have a paper article, paper coverage. It says the world is getting worsening. Day by day the moral shame and moral fear is losing. And the verse, and then I told, what is wrong with Krishnamurti? World is the world. It never gets worse, it never gets better. What we pick, what we catch, indicates how worse we are. Things are there. If you talk about the bad thing, you are a bad person. If you think about the good thing, you are a good person. Or otherwise, I would say, when your mind is beautiful, you see the world as beautiful. If your mind is bad, you see the world is bad. So therefore, you have to understand the good and the bad changes because of your mind reflection is changes. So your friends and the mindfulness is, hey, you are like a chameleon changing the color. So therefore, whenever you are doing metta bhavana, world is good, very green, very lively, very lively, very fresh. But you are with the head, you think world is dissolving and the politicians are bad and all the kind of, there is no such. It's your reflection. So the day you understand, people will say you are mad. Sure. So that will be the today's end of the discussion, sir. Thank you very much for the participation. Today I thought that we have to cut short the program because of the old timetable in program, but it was cancelled in the Minister of Education. So